budget. Hopefully get, we'll get our budget around. Go ahead, start then. Welcome, everyone. This is the City of Ocala Investment Committee for quarter ending June 30th, 2017. I'm Emory Roberts, the Chair of the Committee. Go ahead. We're going to go ahead and approve the minutes from the last meeting.
Motion to approve.
I got one question on that. On page three, it says, my question, it says, Mr. Hilton, I just don't know how you manage your portfolio and what you're looking for. I don't think I would have said anything that negative. I think it would be more, I'm curious how you manage your portfolio, as we're talking about the upswing in interest rates and all that type of stuff. Is this recorded, or is this just from, for some, again?
I think it was just.
It sounds so negative, I don't think I would have said something.
It's recorded.
It's recorded, okay. Now you can check that then, all right.
We can hear again.
Yeah, okay.
And record, and then we can rewrite it. Because most of the time we have issues like that, we just listen it and then we fix it.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So I'll amend my motion to adopt the minutes as amended.
Second? All in favor?
Aye.
Those against? Accepted? All right, we're ready for the reports from PFM. Your first on list today.
All right.
The keyboard and the mic.
All right, very good, very good. Okay, well, good morning, everybody. I don't know about you, but it does feel like a Monday.
It does feel like a Monday.
Oh, yeah. So we had an enjoyable weekend. I'm going to hit some of the highlights here today and talk about, a little bit about the portfolio and the market. If you don't mind, I want to go ahead and just go right to the portfolio first, and then I'll come back to the market stuff and we'll kind of parlay the market into the portfolio. But let's get the portfolio details out first. That's going to be a little bit further on. I guess I can't see the page numbers on the screen, but maybe further on in your report. Going right to the performance numbers in the portfolio, you will see that the portfolio ended up for the June 30th quarter at 38 basis points. The benchmark was 18, so it's a positive 20 basis points over the benchmark. And that leaves us for the last 12 months. The benchmark was a negative 8 basis points, and of course, that's a result of the three Fed increases, and we had the, of course, the last one was June 14th. We had another Fed increase. And it leaves us with 51 basis points over the last 12 months, and then you can see the 3, 5, and 10. And since inception, we're about 40 basis points since we started doing this. Generally, as I've talked about in the last couple of quarters, the duration has been about a little bit south of the benchmark duration. That falls in line with the expectation that the Fed is raising rates slowly but surely. And we actually starting to have a heartbeat now on the interest rate curve. So we kept the duration a little bit shorter. That's not the only contributor to the returns. You'll see that your corporates played a big return, a big portion of the overall return, but at least from a duration strategy, that's kind of what is playing in there. In looking at the portfolio from sort of some statistics for your review, we're at $51 million for par. Market value was also 51.7 or so. You'll see the maturity distribution is laid out in such a fashion that it has changed a little bit from the standpoint, if you think about over the quarters and maybe over the years, I should say now, as we've gone through a different interest rate cycle, now that the Fed are raising interest rates, we have transferred a little bit more from a barbell approach to more of a laddered approach, obviously with taking the sweet spot, if you will, in our area of the yield curve within the distribution requirement, or I should say the benchmark requirement. You'll see that we're heavily invested in the 2 to 3 year area as well as the 1 and 2. And then, of course, we've got it parceled out from the 3 to greater than 5 years, leaving about almost a little about 9% really short term. We'll be using that, of course, to work on and have the next Fed increase. And we are expecting maybe one more this year if the economy continues to move in the direction. We'll look at the the FOMC dot plot here in a minute. So the portfolio is positioned for higher interest rates. Also, since we are the short-term portfolio, we always have to make sure we have enough liquidity for you, since we're really the second line of defense after your bank accounts and your pool accounts for liquidity purposes. So we have that eye there for you as well to make sure that we have enough liquidity for you in case you do need it. And it's always important to let us know if there's any upcoming projects or capital expenditures that you may need money from this portfolio. Always let us know, the sooner the better. But we always have that contingency plan there, so you can rest assured that we keep that in mind as well as we manage the portfolio. But as interest rates are changing, we have kind of moved the portfolio in that perspective. And then if you look at distribution versus return, you'll find that really the sweet spot for us is between 2 to 3 year area is why we're taking advantage of that. So the best return for the duration application is in that range.
Any other questions?
When you look at the, here's the sort of a quarter perspective, you can see June, March, December, and September, kind of give you a quarter by quarter viewpoint. As we've been staying ahead of the benchmark every single quarter. From an earnings standpoint, from both a market value basis and amortized cost basis, you can see what the portfolio brought in. Obviously, we had a positive return, so you would suspect the portfolio earnings to be positive, both on a market value and an amortized cost basis. From a sector allocation, we are been pushing towards the corporates. You'll know that corporates have been contributing pretty well to the overall return, followed by asset backs. Have probably been the two stronger sectors for the portfolio. As you can see, that we've got almost 36% in corporates, followed by 15.5% in asset backs. So we've got a pretty good portion of the portfolio in some type of corporate-related security. This is just the sector allocation versus the benchmark. This chart will show you the differences from quarter to quarter in each of the sectors and what's been changing. If you go back to September 2016 all the way to the present, June 2017, you kind of see what has changed. As you can see, we've added more asset backs from we were almost a year ago. At 7.2 to about 15.5, so we've pretty much doubled that. The other sectors are pretty much about the same. As we've done trades between treasuries and agencies, treasuries and corporates, and taking advantage of the spread differentials between those sectors. But overall, the positions are somewhat neutral even after the trades are taking place over time. But probably the biggest change has been the addition of more asset backs to the portfolio, which has been helping us with the return against the benchmark. This kind of just give you a more detailed breakdown of the portfolio distribution from an average maturity of about 2.77 versus the benchmark of 194. That's average maturity, which is different than duration, so this does not take an effect of mortgage-backed securities and the callable, so that would change, of course, the duration of the numbers as opposed to average maturities. So keep that in mind. When you look at this chart, this kind of tells you what's giving you the biggest punch from a duration standpoint, what part of the maturities is adding to the contribution of the overall duration of 178, and you can see that really the 2 to 3 areas contributing about 54%, and the 1 to 2 is contributing about 36%. So that's really where the portfolio is getting the most return for the positions of duration that were taking place.
You see that change, Steve?
It has changed to where we are today. I would suspect for the next year or so, I think this is kind of where we're going to be. If we felt the Fed was going to raise at a more rapid pace, we'd probably lower that a little bit more. But I think we probably all can agree that we maybe have one more Fed increase this year. So I think we're, from an overall duration strategy. I think we're about going to be at this point, unless something happens, unless we have a war with North Korea, or, you know, something exciting and challenging such as that. Yeah, hopefully not, right. Exactly. Just from a credit quality, you can see we're pretty much participating in all the credit sectors that are permitted by the investment policy. But we do have a very strong positions in high credit quality, as you can see. Now, this is, of course, from an S&P perspective, so this is a AA+. Moody's, of course, will be a AAA, but you can see the distribution from the highest to the lowest. So the vast majority of the portfolio is in really high credit quality. And that's, again, important for this part of this overall master strategy you have in place. You want your short-term portfolio, the 1 to 3, to have good credit quality. So if you need liquidity, we can get it very quickly in this portfolio. So that's, you always have to keep that liquidity necessary. The liquidity necessity gets less and less as you go into the other two managed portfolios because their strategy is going to be different. So we have the high credit quality. This report shows your top 5 and top 10 holdings, so you can quickly see what makes up the vast majority of the holdings. Your top 10 is about 60% of the holdings. You can see it's agencies and corporates have a vast majority of it.
What's the total in the autos?
The total in the autos from a percentage standpoint, I would say we're probably, you know, less than 5 or 6% if you add them all up. None of our corporate holdings, in fact, that's a good, you can see the issuers here, all the issuers are going to be in a very low range. So we have lots of distribution. We're not drinking the Kool-Aid from one particular issuer too much. We have a good distribution of credit. So I think if you add them up, it's probably 3 or 4% probably each individual one. In going to the last page here, from a compliance standpoint, let me get the mouse to move down here. There we go. Oops, sorry. Too fast. I'll go ahead and do the slide report. It was going too slow, and I sped it up, and it went too fast. From a compliance report, you'll see the asset allocation is distributed this way. Everything is in compliance from an issuer, from a security standpoint. And then when we look at the individual issuer, you can see how they're all laid out here. And then you can see, to your question, what the holdings would be in the individual. Yeah, again, it's not that much. But lots of corporate names. We've been adding a few corporate names over the last year or so. And we'll probably be interested to see what the issuance will be in the rest of this year. That spreads it down a little bit, so we'll have to see if corporations come to the market this year and next year. But from a holding standpoint, everything is in compliance throughout the policy. Okay. So let me go back up to the market stuff and hit some of the key elements of the market situation that I think we should kind of talk about. Just from a yield curve perspective, this is will be indicative for all three portfolios, kind of what the yields have done. Since June of last year, March, and then June of this year, to kind of give you a perspective. Obviously, the yield curve is across the board higher, what we've been facing with. Would be something for all three portfolios to consider rising interest rates. You can see just in the short area, the 1 to 3 area where this portfolio is in, we've experienced not only higher interest rates since last year, but rates are higher, of course, since March. So we have been faced with that all the way, which is indicative of why our duration is a little bit short of the benchmark. We want to protect that market value, and we've done that. Even when returns are negative, we've outperformed the benchmark. Let's take a look at the FOMC dot plot. Let me see, I think it's up here. Just to give you an idea. That may just come into what it's beginning. So I talked about a little bit about the June 14th. That was the rate increase. So now we're at this range of 1% and 1/4%. And when you read through the minutes, we're expecting probably just one more Fed increase. I did, we do have a table in here, is the FMSC dot plot. This will give you an idea of what each of the federal board members think about where they expect rates to be. It's their chart, and each dot represents basically a board member's vote, if you will, of where their expected rates to be over time. And you can see that a lot of the folks are expecting somewhere around 2.25, somewhere in 2018. And then in 2019, we're getting much closer to 3%. So if we're on track with that, we still have several Fed increases to go through to get to that 3%. So 2018, based on this, could be a pretty busy year for rising interest rates. But that's, as we know, there's a lot of items that go into that, and we'll have to see how that all works out. This is kind of a lot of detail on the individual official members, so I'll let you go through that, kind of give you a better idea what they're thinking. This is what I was talking about earlier. You can see how credit spreads have come down. There's been lots of demand and a limited supply, and that's basically what's happening. So as there's less supply for corporates, that's going to push yields down, values up. That's good for you as a corporate bond holder. That'll make the values of corporate securities more valuable. It makes the purchases of new ones less interesting because yields have come down. So it's good that we own them now, basically. This is kind of give you an idea, and speaking of corporates, where corporates were in 2017, second quarter, and just kind of look at the 5 years. And I think this is why over the last 5 years, this committee, collectively, we've kind of added more corporates. I think we've changed the last 5 years, the credit quality, if you were here. And you can see that has worked to your advantage by looking at that. That has helped the overall returns because corporates have done well, not only in the recent quarters, but also in the last 5 years. So it's been a good strategy overall for basically all three portfolios. So it's a good look back. Good strong earnings for the first quarter for corporates. You know, of course, everybody's been seeing how the S&P index has been doing extremely well. Just taking a peek at the overall yields for maturities ranging from 3 months out to 10 years and the various sectors across will give you an idea. Again, you'll see how corporates have done well in the single A versus other securities. So it's, again, helpful to the portfolio, even on a yield perspective. From a total return perspective, here's sort of a master chart. You can see all the indices across the board here. And you'll see that the month of June, that pretty much everything went negative, and that was because the Fed did raise rates. So you would expect that even with only 15 days left in the month, that the total return for the month went negative. Except for corporates, and that's really because corporate yields are higher, giving a better cushion, if you will, and they could withstand the Fed increase. So from a shock analysis, the corporates did better with the rate increase compared to the other securities. But unlike 2015 and 2016 Decembers, when the Fed did raise interest rates, this Fed increase did not translate the entire quarter into a negative number. You'll see that as rates are rising, the Fed increases will have a less impact on total return, so that's going to be helpful because higher interest rates will give us more cushion to a Fed increase. So those are some of the key elements of the market. I think from an ongoing strategy standpoint, here are some key drivers that we thought really affected the second quarter. As I said earlier, the Fed increase was a big portion, especially on the short end for us. Overall, mixed readings in the U.S. economy, even though the S&P is doing well, we've had a little bit of job growth. We've had a decline in the overall unemployment rate. Inflation is still less than 2%. We don't have inflation that's screaming above that. GDP numbers were a little bit better this last quarter, but we're still averaging, you know, somewhere around 2.5 as far as GDP. Overall, Europe is doing a little bit better in this more recent time, so that's helpful to us as we've had lots of discussion of China last August at this time, how they decline, and that affected the European market, but we're seeing things get into approval a little bit better. And as I said earlier, we did see credit spreads narrowing down a little bit this past quarter, which was a contributor to the overall positive return for your benchmark. So those are some of the highlights of the market and the overall portfolio, and I'm open to any questions or any comments.
You said that more increases, more Fed rate increases, you're going to have more of a cushion in the portfolio, so that it's going to be less.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about as Feds are increasing rates, that's going to push all securities to higher yield. So when new securities come out, they have a higher coupon.
Right, more you'll be investing at a higher rate.
Exactly. And so those higher coupons help offset a change in market value, because market value is a change in principal value as well as income. And the more income you have offsets the market value. So we went, you know, we'll go through a little bit of pain here with declines in market value, but over time, the interest income will help cushion us.
Any other questions?
Motion to accept the PFM report.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
All against? Motion accepted. Next is Sykes.
I'll get you set up here. There you go.
Good morning. My name is Kim Mikely, and I'm with Sykes Investment Advisors. And I'll start off just giving you a little bit of background information about the market, and then apply it to the portfolio that we manage for you. Basically, fixed income markets provided positive returns for the quarter. And corporate credits delivered the excess return, as we saw there before. And in actuality, that excess return is in relation to a treasury or risk-free asset for a comparable maturity. Lower-rated credits provided the strongest gain. And then we have investments in securitized assets, which those were mixed in that mortgage-backed securities did not really provide any excess return. And commercial mortgage-backed securities and asset-backed securities provided modest excess returns. The Fed increased Fed funds rates, as we saw in June. And with that, you saw the short end of the curve increase about 13 to 26 basis points. But the longer end of the curve, which that's where we also invest, it's a 1 to 10 year benchmark, it actually declined about 9 to 18 basis points. We saw the Fed rate increase in June. That was the second year to date, and the fourth increase since December 2015. Year to date, the 1 year has gone up about 42 basis points, and year to date for the 10 year, it's actually gone down about 14. And another way to kind of look at the flattening of the yield curve is to see the spread differential between a 2 year and a 10 year. And we've seen that spread differential at about 92 basis points. And on a year-to-date basis, the 2 to 10 year has actually flattened about 34. So we're just seeing it flatten. And looking at the spread history of the 2 to 10 year spread, it has averaged about 177. So you can see that it's kind of tight and flattening. The portfolio that we manage for you is, obviously on the other end of the spectrum as far as maturity and duration. We're much longer in that it's bench to the BMW Merrill Lynch 1-to-10-year domestic master. This portfolio for the quarter benefited from the decline in interest rates on the long end of the curve. And look at the returns compared to a much shorter benchmark, they're about double. So for the quarter, we were at 0.79, the benchmark at 0.92. The difference, we were behind about 13 basis points. Year to date, returns were 136, a little bit behind the benchmark, 26 basis points. And then for the year, you can see that we have that negative absolute return. And keeping in mind, from June of last year, we saw the 10-year at like a 147, and you know, we ended June at a 230. So you got this uptick in interest rates, and primarily in the fourth quarter, we saw a major uptick in interest rates after the Fed election, where the return in the fourth quarter was a negative 1.95%. We were ahead of the benchmark that quarter, but certainly you have to make up a lot of ground with that increase in interest rates. One thing to see is over the last 3 and 5 years, the returns averaged about 2%. And for the longer term time periods, 5, 7, 10 years since inception, we've had outperformance. So just to kind of go over the characteristics of the portfolio to better explain that underperformance, we'll start first with the market values. And the market value is at $56.2 million, and it's increased about $445,000. The duration is just slightly longer than the benchmark, 4.3 years versus 4.2. The yield is a little less than the bench, and that's because we do have an overweight, as you can see here, in treasuries. We have actually increased our treasury exposure over the quarter by about 3%, as well as about 3.5% on a contribution to duration basis. So we have the sector distribution broken down by contribution to duration and by market value. As we typically are, we avoid the agency sector, just a small exposure there. As it relates to corporates, we were underweight in our corporate exposure on a market value basis of about 7%. But if you look at it against the contribution to duration basis, it's more of a slight underweight of about 2.5%. We are about neutral in financials, and we had increased our corporate exposure from a contribution standpoint by about 3%, and that was placed in industrials. If you look at the securitized sector, we are about neutral on a market value basis, but we are underweight from respect of contribution to duration. And that is from this mortgage-backed perspective. To go back as far as the underweight in corporates, one thing I want to point out is, as we've talked about, spreads have been compressing. Spreads are at a three-year low. They are through their long-term averages. Corporate leverage is at a 15-year high. And so given, you know, where we are in the marketplace as far as some uncertainty, we felt like that the valuation perspective, we were going to trim back our corporate exposure. So certainly that has had an effect upon the return. If you look at the securitized sector, we have actually declined from about 29% to 21% here, and we have increased our CMBS and ABS exposure, which is out of benchmark, by about 1.5%. There's still some value there, And we look at this particular sector as more as safe income at a reasonable price. One thing with regards to the mortgage-backed sector, as you know, the Fed has continued to reinvest prepayments, and that reinvestment process has continued since with quantitative easing. But certainly, there is going to be, I guess, we're going to see that reinvestment get pulled back. We haven't gotten the full plan and details on that, but we feel like with that pullback, that valuations right now are a bit stressed because of that reinvestment, and we're trying to be a little bit ahead of the curve with regards to that. Okay. Are there any questions as it relates to the performance and the portfolio itself as to where we're doing? We've kind of just taken some data off, look at valuation and from the securitized side as well as the corporate side.
Tim, could you expand a little bit on the comment you just made? Assuming that we have a change in direction on QE,
mm-hmm.
Specifically, how do you expect that to affect your portfolio and the basic thesis that you have, which is lower for longer? Is that a fair question?
Sure. I mean, as far as that the reinvestment, I mean, essentially, there's only so much to go around in the marketplace, and the Fed has been reinvesting back into mortgages. And so if they are not going to be the buyer, at this point with them reinvesting, it has caused spread compression in that particular sector. And if they slowly step away from that reinvestment, you've got various buyers in the market, and it very well could provide a situation where you see spreads widen in the mortgage-backed sector. There could be some volatility there. So we're looking at it more from fundamental and valuation that they're very rich, and we like to take our profits when we can and then step back and use it as opportunity to reinvest later. As it relates to lower for longer, you know, we've modified that as far as the 10-year. We have expanded that from 1.5% to 2.5%. And, you know, certainly we feel that on the short end of the curve, there may be one more rate increase, but it's more to do with financial conditions and the market. And these rate increases up to this point have been very well telegraphed. And one thing that we have stated is that we feel these rate increases are not because of inflation or overheating of the economy, but more so as an opportunity because financial conditions are loose. You're getting an unloosening because we have been at this unprecedented emergency level for the target Fed funds rate. And the Fed has been backed up into a corner, and they needed this opportunity to you know, at least move from zero, and we certainly have done that. The thing is, though, they've done it since December 2015 because financial conditions are looser. You've got a strong stock market. You've got interest rates that have declined. Growth is still not excessive, and the dollar is weak. And so, essentially, the Fed is trying to, as Jim Keegan, our CIO, says, put some ammunition into the monetary policy gun so it can be redeployed later should we have an economic downturn. And so the Fed's kind of been a situation where we have been in an economic recovery for 8 years. And so you could see perhaps an economic downturn if you look at the law of averages in the next 12, 24, or 36 months.
So they're kind of hedging their bets because if we have a retraction, interest rates have nowhere to go if we haven't raised them. And they're then monetarily,
they can't raise it out and go. You would do a quantitative easing.
That would be an unprecedented situation to be in, wouldn't it?
So, I mean,
that's
certainly.
That's happened before. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to find out. Yeah.
Welcome to Japan.
So the thing that we look at is, you know, growth has still been at 2%, and we don't see an overheating of the economy. So the longer end of the curve, I mean, it has increased somewhat, but we feel like these increases, this is going to be the slowest Fed rate increase cycle that we've seen. And certainly with the tapering of the reinvestment, the Fed very well may kind of pull back some of those gut bumps that you see. Because that is something the Fed is concerned about, financial stability and asset valuations. I mean, they don't say it, but they're trying to keep financial stability such that we don't have a bubble, if you will. And I mean, it's there. And so that's where, you know, if you look at mortgage backs, they're extremely rich, and we've pulled back. With regards to corporates have continued to do quite well, and perhaps we're just a little bit ahead of the curve of, you know, taking some risk off the table. But we do have a longer portfolio. So, you know, with moves, it's much more pronounced with this portfolio as opposed to a shorter portfolio.
Okay.
So, right. Does that help?
Yeah, that's pretty much my question, and you answered it.
Good.
Okay.
Good.
Thank
you. Okay. From a compliance perspective, we continue to remain within the policy guidelines. And as it relates to, you had asked about asset-backed car loans. That's something that has kind of been in the marketplace as far as the quality of those kinds of loans. And we do not have any asset-backed car receivables in the portfolio. As far as our strategy and outlook, we look at corporates from a fundamental, technical, evaluation perspective. We are in a deterioration phase of the credit cycle. As stated before, leverage for corporates is at, it says 15-year, but we have a chart here that's showing a 16-year level. And going back, corporate profits have been recovering, but we feel like they're kind of stalling out. And certainly from a pro-growth fiscal perspective, with legislation, certainly has had some delays, roadblocks, a little bit of lack of clarity here and there. And so we have assigned that as a mild negative. Technically, there's still strong foreign demand for U.S. corporates. We certainly have the U.S. a yield advantage compared to our other counterparts across the world. However, that attractiveness is beginning to fade as many of the other central banks are talking about normalization. Corporate issuance still remains quite high. And as it relates to valuation, we state that as more of a negative in that even this quarter, looking at the corporate option adjusted spread, it's come in from a 118 to a 109. These three items here have not changed since last quarter, but we do have a slight underweight in corporates, and that is written from the perspective of contribution to duration.
And just to highlight, you've got the corporate issuance here, which is pulled back a little bit. Last year was a record, but certainly very strong. And then as it relates to option adjusted spreads, which is that spread between a corporate and a treasury, those have come in. And it was last at a 109, last quarter, 118. I guess I just want to make sure I have covered a few of the things where we were talking about financial conditions and where we see this more as less as a tightening cycle and more as an unloosening. You know, the reality is that with the quantitative easing that we've experienced, it has asset valuations have benefited, but it hasn't been a benefit as far as a major uptick in economic growth. We've just kind of mulled along. And let's see, I'm not sure I've covered everything here. As it relates to Trump and the committee, Trump has finally made one nomination for Fed governors. There's three open positions. So beyond those two vacancies, we have potential Fed leadership change as far as Yellen and Fisher the first half of 2018. So we'll be watching that in terms of whether they will stay on because their governorship extends beyond their chairman and vice chairman terms. And then lastly, I wanted to show you just an update within our firm. Sorry. The AUM for sites is at $26.7 billion. And I wanted to notify you that our ownership change has been in effect. It was closed the deal with Virtus Investment Partners on June 1st. And I have a page here where you can see that Virtus is our holding company, whereas before it was Ridgeworth. And Virtus is based out of Hartford, Connecticut. With the combination of what was previously the Ridgeworth organization, which was comprised of sites, Ceradex and Solvent, the AUM for Virtus is at $9 billion, and sites is going to represent almost about a third of the organization from an AUM perspective. And as I have communicated in the past, the portfolio management team, the investment process, none of that has changed. I mean, it should be, you know, just semantics, if you will. But we're glad that that is, completed, and hopefully from a long-term perspective, we'll provide additional growth to the SIPES organization. Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Any other questions? Okay, motion?
Motion to accept the SIPES report.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Right, motion accepted.
All right. Dated. Yep, next it's all around.
Okay. Line up better next quarter. Yeah.
Thank you everyone for having us once again. I will
try not to belabor too many points. It's always tough to go last. And thank you for your patience for sitting through now a third fixed income manager going over the market. Not many board citations such as you do. So thank you once again. I'm going to skip ahead and just go to and just talk a little bit about performance. I'll get into that and then the portfolio and hopefully segue from there into a little bit about the market and you know, put some context into our portfolio, how we're managing things. Again, I'll try not to belabor too many of the same points. I think based on what we're seeing in the market, we're pretty much in a lot of consensus with a lot of our viewpoints, which may be a scary thing. Some of us should possibly all reevaluate. But to be honest, I think a lot of us are looking at a lot of the same things, and I'll hopefully maybe share a little things we're looking at in a little bit more from a different perspective. But again, the market is the market. I think a lot of people are in agreement at this point, which is usually a time to look a different way. So looking at performance for the quarter, we were pretty much flat with the benchmark. Performance of about 54 basis points versus 55 of the benchmark. On a one-year basis, we outperformed by about 65 basis points. On a fiscal year basis, we outperformed by about 40 basis points. Looking over a longer-term track period, 3, 5, and 10, inception, et cetera, we're outperforming the benchmark as well. Looking at your beginning market value for the quarter at about 75.3 million, and then gained about 400,000. Up to about 75.7. So looking at absolute returns in the marketplace right now, it's certainly a low absolute return environment. A lot of the factors we discussed, low interest rates, rising interest rates, corporate spreads being relatively tight, not a lot of room to run there. So it is it's a tough environment right now to really provide much in absolute returns. So we're really aiming to stay conservative, keep it safe, protect your principal, while still providing positive relative returns. And hopefully, as has been mentioned, as rates rise, opportunities arise, we can really reinvest at higher rates and really take advantage of good opportunities. Right now, a lot of it is sitting back, waiting for those opportunities, and in the meantime, providing positive returns once rates rise and once spreads widen as well, which we'll get into a little bit. That should present pretty good opportunities for reinvestment where we can really take advantage and do well for your portfolio. Looking at a little bit at the current attributes, as we have been, we are short duration. As has been mentioned, we really want to play it safe for a rising interest rate environment. It may be a slow process, but we view it as if we're going to get it wrong, we want to get it wrong and not lose your portfolio money. We'd rather play it safe. So that's how we approach things right now as interest rates look to rise with a lot of factors that would affect that. What's key to that positioning is to not necessarily give up yield. So as you look at the yield maturity right now for the portfolio, about 1.7 compared to the benchmark at about 1.8. As it stands today, the portfolio is probably a little bit higher yielding. So the key is when you're going to play it safe and you're going to protect yourself from interest rates and interest rate sensitivity is to not give up too much carry or too much income or yield. And that's really what we're trying to do, and I'll get into exactly how we're trying to accomplish that. And that's how we're still able, even with that defensive positioning, we're still able to provide you positive returns along with the benchmark, and if things work out the right way, we can outperform on a pretty decent basis. We are overweight credit as it stands right now. A lot of that is how we're yielding the same or higher than the benchmark. Within that credit, it's very important to stress high quality, cash flow positive, bellwether type names to be very comfortable with, and from a credit standpoint that we remain very comfortable with. From a maturity distribution, I think the key that I want to point out here is that we're really trying to barbell the portfolio. In other words, we want to be overweight the short end to remove that interest rate sensitivity risk and allow for reinvestment as rates move higher. But also you want to overweight the longer end of the curve. As we'll see a little bit, that 3, 4, and 5 year of the curve is where the most roll is. So you have the most ability for the portfolio to roll down and capture that additional spread as you get closer to maturity. Also, when you're in credit bonds, the longer you go out, the more yield you get, the more spread you get. So we want to make sure we get to capture that higher spread, get you higher return, but also somewhat counter that with the lower duration and that lower interest rate sensitivity. You really see that this is maturity. If you look at the duration distribution and the front end of that curve, less than 1 year, what makes that so high is our higher weight in floating rate securities. So those will reset either on a monthly or a quarterly basis as rates move higher. So it's not necessarily just being short, having bonds mature.
you have bonds that may be longer maturity, but they have the ability to reset at higher coupons, that'll kind of, you know, sort of accomplish the same goal, and you get them at fairly cheap valuations. From a quality standpoint, what you'll notice here is the single A. A lot of that is our Azure overweight credit. We want to be in you know, high-rated credits that give you some of that spread. We're underweight triple Bs. The reason for that is we don't want to get in those risky names. There's a lot of energy names that are still triple B rated, and officially, you know, but they are officially investment grade. But there's a risk there we just don't want to take. We don't think it's what's prudent for your portfolio. While we want to do pick up extra spread, we want to do it the more conservative way. By doing that, we think that single A bucket is really the somewhat the sweet spot of lower risk and higher spread. In terms of compliance, we are all within compliance the standards you have provided. I think from there, I'm gonna jump ahead, or jump back, I should say, and go a little bit into some of our economic commentary. I do want to just touch on quickly, I guess, what helped and hurt. Go back, just a little bit of performance. What helped and hurt for the quarter? As has been mentioned, we are credit spreads rallied about 9 basis points for the quarter as we're overweight credit. That certainly helped us. The counter to that was a lot of times you see these risk-on rallies within credit, and it's more focused on the higher beta names. So those triple P's that I mentioned were underweight. A lot of energy names, you know, more I don't want to call them distressed, but just higher risk type names that we don't necessarily want to get involved in right now in this current environment. Those outperformed. So being underweight those names, we're going to underperform. But again, that's something we're comfortable with. We'd rather ride the wave of the higher quality. We do think over time, as you see more dispersion in the markets, and you're seeing that now, really, especially in the last couple of weeks, you're seeing dispersion between higher quality names and lower quality names. We want to take advantage of the higher quality, that safer spread. And I think over time, you know, that'll be very positive for your portfolio. The term structure, which I'll get into a little bit, helped. I mentioned that we're being short. We have a positive weight in the short end and the floating rate securities, and the short end of the curve did move up pretty substantially, so that was able to help your portfolio as well. We are, you know, fairly in consensus in terms of the economy right now, and that a lot of our overweighting credit and spreads is because of that. Although spreads are very tight, we don't think there's too much risk as we stand right now, especially from the higher quality names, because of this really slow growth that we're seeing right now. This is we recently had another jobs number come out last week. Another was positive, over 200,000 jobs. So this is really becoming, with a couple anomalies here and there on a monthly basis, you're seeing this steady growth of 150,000 plus type jobs on a monthly basis, and it's, you know, it's continuing, so we think that's going to continue to go from there. We may see lower numbers because we're, you know, possibly at somewhat full employment, but it's still a very healthy job market. It's a fairly healthy economy. The question then becomes, if we're at full employment or getting there, what's going to happen with wages, and then what's going to happen with inflation? And as has been mentioned, with the Fed rising, you know, raising rates, this is what they're looking at in a lot of cases. They see healthy employment numbers. They see wages, as you see here. Oh, this is actually, skip ahead. This is the, these are wages that are slowly moving up. These are the median weekly earnings. Again, a slow trickle upwards, not as fast as we and the Fed would certainly like it to be. But as job numbers continue to proceed, these wage numbers should continue to go up. The question then becomes, if you're getting higher wages and consumers are bidding up prices, purchasing prices, where's the inflation? And it's a question I think that is puzzling not just ourselves, but you know, economists across the globe at this point. There's a lot of theories as to why that is. Some of it could be transitory or temporary. We see oil just went through a bear market itself, and that's going to drag you know, some of the inflation numbers down. There's a lot of competition within the wireless service business. That's going to drag inflation down. There's a lot of theories as to why that is. But essentially, it is what it is. And until that really picks up, I think the Fed is in somewhat of a, not a holding pattern, but they're certainly, you know, kind of pumping the brakes a little bit in terms of what they're going to do with rates. And that is, you know, definitely keeping the long end of the curve now, in addition to other factors. But until that inflation starts to trickle up, there's going to be somewhat of a holding pattern here in terms of the Fed and where long rates are going to go. And it's a tough cookie right now in terms of solving that, because, you know, based on all previous economic theories, should be at somewhat full employment, which means that you should have higher wages, which means you should have higher inflation. It's a question of what kind of jobs are we adding. They've been not very well diversified in terms of the jobs we're adding. It's a different job market. We live in a different economy, different types of, especially in the technology area, there's a lot of different kinds of jobs, programmers, a lot of consulting type jobs that are not officially part-time. But in terms of their pay scale, are probably more on the part-time basis, so that could drag wages down a little bit. So I'm very interested to see where we go from here. This is some of the backstop we've seen in spreads and interest rates has been not just from the Fed, but also from international counterparts and central banks. And this actually, look at the Fed in blue. In terms of their asset purchases, they're essentially non-existent, as has already been touched on. We're going to actually start going the opposite way. For next quarter, if I have a similar slide, my guess is we'll have something projected for the future, and you'll start seeing actual negative growth in asset purchases coming from our foreign central banks. Especially, we've already touched a little bit on the Fed and their reinvestment, what that's going to do. The ECB in different parts of Europe are becoming a lot more hawkish as well, and they're going to pull back on some of their quantitative easing. So that's going to have an impact not just on the Treasury market, but on the credit market. They hold a fairly large position of U.S. credit. Again, so we have one here, just of negative, these are negative government bonds, but the share of negative yielding bonds in various countries across Europe, and it's very large in some countries. And this is tailed off somewhat. And as those rates rise, you'll see some of that money trickle out from the U.S. But it gives an idea of why credit spreads are tightening. It's not just a matter of fundamentals and credits being very healthy and cash flow positive. There's a lot of money that's being put into the U.S. market, both in a credit standpoint and a treasury standpoint. We believe this will pull back as those central banks become more hawkish. They stop with their asset purchases, and these negative rates start to, hopefully for their sake, subside a little bit. So it's very interesting to see, you know, how that will play out in the future. There's also still a ton of cash overseas. We talked a little bit about fiscal stimulus and what that's going to mean. The tax repatriation was a huge topic just a couple months ago. It's kind of gone away. I think healthcare became more of the forefront, so they stepped away from that now. Now tax reform seems to be the new, you know, hot ticket item. What is that going to mean? We still got a lot of money. Apple has about $290 billion of cash overseas. I just read this weekend.
Well, how is that money invested overseas? And if it does come back here, will it have an impact on those rates over there? I mean, is it under the mattress or is it
No, I mean, it's invested. It's in. So, yeah. It's in various. I think a lot of it's in Ireland.
Yeah. So if they liquidate, then it could have.
Certainly have an impact over there as well. How much they're going to, I don't think they're going to move over everything at once.
No.
I think they, who knows what they're going to, you know, probably some kind of one time lower tax hit from the U.S. and bring over a portion of it. But yeah, absolutely. It'll have an investment, have a reaction, an effect on rates over there.
Wouldn't that have its own quantitative easing effect?
It really could.
Because, you know, that's huge amounts of money to those one-time purchases in the market. Yeah, I don't know how that's
going to
net out.
Yeah,
I
read.
I wonder if
they're
paying the
cut. Yeah. Oh, they look at it over there. Rates go up, and their money's over here, and they look at it here.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Well, especially hopefully they put the money, if they bring it over here, they put it to work. Mm-hmm. They've got a lot of things that they think that they're, Apple, for example, has been raising debt in the U.S. on a pretty good, they just had a new issue recently. So if they bring that money over, theoretically, they don't have to do that anymore. Right. So a lot of the purchases that they make, that they can use, they've got somewhat of a side topic. But if you look at, you know, Apple and Amazon and Google and Netflix, there's so much cash that they can have to work with. It's a question of what are they going to do Barron's had an article this weekend about some of those, really more about sports programming, but about football, when those come up for bid, if Facebook gets involved, Amazon gets involved, because they just have so much money to use.
It's cars and robots.
Really, yeah, a lot of, you know, very, becoming very automated. It's very, you know, interesting, and it gets back to the point of being a very different economy. These are companies that didn't exist, you know, 10, 15 years ago,
right?
And now they're essentially dictating some of the markets that are over here. A lot of the, this is more media related, but a lot of the, you know, old school media and advertising are just completely being shifted upside down because of it. I read to the $490 billion would represent, of the S&P 500 large cap companies, only 10 have a market cap that is above the cash holdings of Apple overseas. just astounding. These are large cap, you know, bellwether companies around forever, so it's really, something's going to happen. So yeah. you have to really keep an eye on that and how it's going to impact things. A little bit about raids, we've already, you know, already somewhat discussed, but we had the, you know, the so-called Trump spike post-election with the hopes of fiscal stimulus, some of the tax reform we've already mentioned, infrastructure spending. That somewhat subsided a few months later. But then you had a couple rate hikes that came in December and then March and then one again in June. You'll see, you know, a couple spikes around those times. Even those, at this point, the impact of the Fed hikes is starting to subside a little bit. Again, it's 25 basis points each time. It's very transparent when they're going to do it. And as we've discussed, it's going to be a very slow process. So really, at this point, the market is not so much relying on the Fed. They're really looking for something else to come in. And I think it's mostly fiscal stimulus to really step up and do something to allow that growth to go beyond this 2% that we've seen now for quite some time. A little bit, again, not to belabor the point too much, but looking at the yield curve, you look at the short end of the curve and the 3 month up to the 2 year, moving up pretty substantially. As you go further out, you see those rates coming down, and flattening. A lot of that, again, the Fed is raising, that's gonna pump up that front end, but the long end of the curve is more skeptical, I'd say. It's interesting, it's in a large contrast to the equity markets. Normally you see the two somewhat inversely correlated. You look at bond prices, so the inverse of their yields are rallying as rates come down, along with equity prices, which doesn't, you know, typically make a lot of sense. There's a lot of reasons for that. We've had this quantitative easing that have really pushed everyone towards risky assets. So you could see, again, another impact of that QE coming off is you could see a sell-off in the equity market. And what does that mean for spreads? That's, you know, we're prepared for that, again, as we're in this high-quality, lower duration type credits, because that could have an impact as well. Just discussing credit spreads, you know, already to discuss some of it, you look at that credit continuing to come down. The new issuance, as has been discussed, has been very tight. It's a game we like to, you know, participate in a lot. Lately, we've had names we like that have come out, and, you know, they come out, let's say, hypothetically at 100 basis points, and it looks like a very attractive name, and by the time it actually prices late in the day, it's down to about 80, 85 basis points when you look back and say, okay, not as attractive anymore. So, you know, a lot of times we'll put in for a name, and it'll tighten, and we'll say, you know what, take this out of the order. That's not a price that we're comfortable with. A lot of it is we've gotten that role I mentioned before by just going into treasuries right now. And we're not going to get in a name that's too tight just to do it. So we want to play it safe. And, you know, as these factors play out and rates rise and QE comes off, you know, opportunities should present themselves. And, you know, that's when we'll get back in the market in full. This is just our normally, but just a little bit of our sensitivity analysis, how we're positioned. Look at column 4. This is a rate move of 50 basis points across the curve. We're going to outperform by about 30 basis points. That's, you know, the yield curve shifts, a lot of things happen, so that's probably not likely. We think what's most likely is more of a column 11, where we have a flattener, as we've seen, and spreads continue to tighten, and in that case, we're going to outperform by, again, by that 30 basis points. So what's been happening is how we, you know, think things will continue. We actually think rates will a little bit rise in the long end, But the front end will come up more, so we have an overall raising rate environment, but a continued flattening as the long-term growth prospects stay somewhat moderate. Is there any questions?
Motion to accept Starlight report?
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
All against?
Now, John, with Cap Trust, is going to wrap it up for us.
I sure will.
So this is our fixed income composite report. You get a picture of the entire portfolio. Here we're looking again at the breakdown between the managed assets, PFM Silver Asset Sites, currently valued at $183 million. The internal accounts the Florida local government, Florida Prime, and SunTrust are running at 41 for a total of $225 million. This is the return page. As you can see, we had net flows of $38,000 to the positive with investment gains of about $1 million, giving us a current balance of $183,629,000. On the right-hand side, you can see that the policy, there are no changes to the policy. Our heaviest weighting again is to that middle group managed by Sawgrass, with 30% managed by PFM and 30% managed by SETS. On the account itself, taking the trailing returns through June the 30th, for the 1 year, the trailing 1 year, our account has actually beat our policy by 26 basis points. Just to carry that over for a 2 year period, again, that condition is the same, and actually during the entire 10 year period, you can positive policy, which is kind of unusual. Very, very good. Very good. Congratulations.
Right.
But you're the survivor. You're
I know. I think I'm the only one.
So on the next group of statistics, we have fiscal year returns ending in September. Here you can see for the quarter it was actually flat. Again, this is on a net fee basis. If you look at it on a gross basis, you actually beat the policy. But it's net of fees. The year-to-date number is positive 0.07, which again, against the policy of negative 0.08. So it's just a slight 15 basis point win there. And also for the 2016 year, you had a win. So that bodes well. You might also see on the lowest blocks, returns in up markets, you're picking up about 107 for the 1 year period, 96 for the 3 year period, and down markets, you're only picking up 84% and 82%. So that's generally a good statistic as well. I think this little graph, or set of graphs here, is kind of illuminating, and the picture tells the story. The blue triangle is your portfolio, and notice that generally speaking it's falling in the upper left hand quadrant, which means you're getting solid returns for less risk than the benchmark itself, and that's encouraging, and it's both in the short term and the long term. Let's work through here to something. Here's the composite expressed in bar form. As you can see, of course, in this environment, these return numbers are very tiny, so that is the way it is. But you can see that you're running with gray shading, which means you're meeting your policy and on an aggregate basis, and also doing well against peers. And that takes its that shows all the way down. Now, on sites we have had for the quarter and the year to date, and the 1 year and 3 year periods, a slight underperformance. And again, I think we've had an explanation for that. This is it's a much more difficult place to be right now than perhaps in the shorter areas because of high degrees of uncertainty. So I'm not going to go through the individual managers, as we've already done that. Are there any questions?
Sykes and you are reporting two different numbers. Now, it's not off by much, but there's still two different numbers. I'm just curious as to why.
Yeah, it's probably the fee issue. Mm-hmm. What's the difference that you're seeing?
About $2,500?
$2,500.
Yeah. You have 56, 164, 139, and Sykes had 56, 166, 637. On their...
Or he may be using the custodian statement,
right,
which is going to be probably settlement date, and we do trade date. Uh-huh. So there could be some trades, income, anything that could not be reflective.
They're almost
that's part of the reconciliation.
Custodians always use settlement date.
Any other questions?
A motion
to accept the catch-up report.
So moved. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Other matters. I was remiss earlier by not introducing Peter. Peter Brill is our Assistant Director of Finance and Customer Service. Came aboard in late May. And we're looking at him in the future being a member of the committee. We can discuss going forward. One other matter is everyone's aware of the Series 50 exam. By September, working with municipalities, I think that applies to everyone. All right? No? Indeed. The Series 50 exam, there's a deadline of September 12th, 2017. Uh-huh. For any advisors with municipalities, government entities?
Yeah, there's a deadline of September, if you need to, I can forward you the email. It came from the League of Cities.
Uh-huh.
And it states that every management firm that works with a government agency needs to have passed their 50 series license.
That's not for investment. That's for municipal advisors. That's who's providing debt advice and not investments.
Debt advice?
Yeah. So investment advisors are in the Investment Act of 1940.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are registered with the SEC.
Yeah.
For those who are providing financial advisory services, which is going to be debt related, have to have a Series 50. It's a new, brand new series.
Yeah.
And so traditional financial advisors in the municipal space, all the firms who are involved with debt issuance, those advisors have to have the Series 50. It's brand new.
Okay, so it's debt specific.
Yes, not for the investment.
For
the way the email was done, it looked like everybody.
Yeah,
right?
This is a very new regulation that came into effect and started the last couple of years. It's really for the very first time financial advisors, and the financial advisors in the municipal space is kind of a misnomer. It's really debt advisors, if you will. They have to be registered for the very first time. They've never been regulated. Those of us who are in the Investment Advisory Act have been regulated forever, and we all carry different licenses, and the firms are registered with the SEC, you get an ADP Part 1, Part 2, all that kind of information. But those
that
guys...
That applies like Craig Dunlap.
Yes, exactly. I was going to mention a couple of names. In fact, we're, PFM is also a financial advisory firm, so all of our folks who are providing financial advice, i.e. the issuance, capital planning, all that kind of stuff, have our taking the Series 50 already.
Okay. Yeah, because we saw PFM on there. It's just the way they were wording it was.
Yeah.
Municipal advisors.
Right.
There was really nothing specific to debt issuance. It's just the same if you're advising.
Exactly.
So that's why we
were there. Yeah. That's why we want to explain that to you.
Right. There's a list of firms that passed the examination.
Yeah, we were one of the first.
Yeah. You were first, huh?
Yeah.
And
that's
like the test.
What have I got to say?
And our last slide is when we put together our treasury accountant, and everybody puts this together. Just want to touch on it very briefly. You know, portfolio totals down approximately $4.8 million, but that's really related to the SunTrust bank account. Our primary checking is down about $6 million. Everybody else, all of our other accounts are up slightly, which is a good thing across the board. And it's really a matter of timing with our checking account. bills we have to pay mid-year, and we also did the bond refunding, we had to transfer some money towards that, so we have some outlying expenses that are normal for this time of the year.
And the property tax might start rolling in November, so that'll bring it back up, that'll help.
But it is good to say, it's mostly related to our checking account, not to any of our advisors or other investment accounts. And with that large balance in our checking, what we're looking at some other short-term investment options that we're going to discuss with senior management and move forward with some short-term, highly liquid, like SBA or Florida Local Government Investment Trust, that we can invest some of the excess cash in our daily checking, which is awful high, it's $27 million. But again, it's ebbs and flows. So. That's all I have. Any other questions from the committee or comments?
I think everybody's good.
And thank you, everyone, for presenting today.
Thank you.
Thank you.